Welcome to The Procurement Show.
Hello, and welcome to The Procurement Show, the show that tackles the topics we all need to think about and sets out to explore the more interesting bits of procurement. I'm Jonathan O'Brien.
And I'm Paul Philpott. I'm just scared at how I'm going to get through this shopping list of Jonathan's, honestly.
Those are my riders. This week, we're talking about data and why we all need clean data and why, if we don't have good clean data, we don't have AI.
The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, training procurement teams worldwide to deliver outstanding results.
And to help me, our guest is a data expert and describes himself as an international business leader with a broad base of B2B experience. He's come from the dark side of sales and was once a sales director for Johnson Diversey, then managing director for Johnson Diversey in Romania. He's been a global consultant with Grange Partnership in Amsterdam and is now a managing partner with ProcureView. ProcureView specialise in analysing spend data within companies and boasts their team delivers the fastest, most comprehensive and actionable insights. To find out how they do this and the secrets behind data cleaning that enables this, please would you welcome to The Procurement Show, Andy Simmons. Andy, hello, welcome to The Procurement Show. It's really great that you could join us.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. I've got to say, very happy to be here as I embark on my first ever podcast.
Oh, so you're in safe company.
Yeah. First ever podcast.
Are you
wow.
Sure?
I wouldn't have admitted to that. I would have just pretended that I've done this many times.
Much like most people don't admit to ever coming on this show either.
Not after they've been on there and met you.
With that introduction, I want to, you know, you say you use the term clean data. Please tell me that data that's a bit off is called dirty data.
Oh, yeah. You love a bit.
Dirty data. Dirty data.
Down and dirty with the data. Yeah. Let's talk about data, clean and dirty. But companies have lots of data. And they have multiple systems, they're duplicated, mixed, missing data. Every company I've worked with, data's not been clean and good. Where do you start?
Obviously, I'm biased. I work for a spend analytics company, so my focus is naturally on spend data. And also my background, whilst I did start in the dark side, is mostly procurement. So once again, that would lead me to focus on spend data. But if you look at the reality of a company, it's got two main, very key data elements. One is sales. So what they're actually selling, and two is the spend, what they're actually buying. And I have yet to see a company that has not tracked its sales more accurately than it tracks its spend data. And there are good reasons for that. It drives your income. Governments are very keen that it's accurate so they can tax you. And it's the lifeblood of the company and receives a lot of executive attention. Spend data, not so much. But thankfully, that's starting to change as companies realize the strategic benefit that a well-run procurement department can bring. And they will start to actually invest in having clean data. And then the next step, which is taking it to analytics. And if you look at the picture most companies have, they'll have data on an assortment of ERP systems, maybe different IT systems. They're going to have travel and expenses, P cards, and probably a selection of Excel files lurking out there that also contain some really useful information. Now, the good news is we can take that and actually turn it into one source of truth, assuming we actually get access to all of the data. But to go back to your original question, I would definitely start with spend, just because sales has received lavish amounts of attention for as long as I've been working anyway.
Yeah, it's a really good observation. And a lot of that data will be stuck on somebody's laptop somewhere as well. So I guess just finding out where all that data is in the first place, it must be a colossal task.
I'm going to raise the AI point early on.
It's too early.
I know it's really early, but I'm just expecting that AI is going to be able to help a lot with this cleansing of data. How can it help? But furthermore, it's on the tip of my tongue. What's the phrase when it makes things up again?
Hallucination.
Hallucination, yeah. With regards to hallucinations, which we've discussed numerous times on this show, if you're using AI to help cleanse the data, how can you safeguard against hallucinations creeping in as part of that process?
Our approach is to combine AI with real good old-fashioned human analysts. And what we've done is we've taken our process and over the last 5-6 years, streamlined it further and further. So it starts with the human analyst giving the AI some input. The AI then goes and does what it needs to do in terms of cleaning data, for example, and then we'll check it. And if there's something in there that doesn't look right, that will then be corrected. We will go back, input the correction into the AI, which then learns from that. So it's an ongoing iterative process. And I think the way that modern AI brings more benefits in terms of speed and accuracy is it can be self-learning, so you don't actually have to teach it what we would have been teaching it maybe 2 years ago. But also the constant checking and reiteration of making sure that there are no hallucinations takes that out of the equation. Hmm. And that's why our combination of using the two combined, I think, is a very positive approach and keeps the data as clean and as accurate and hallucination-free as mm-hmm. possible.
Can't believe we're doing a whole podcast talking about data.
You know, I know.
It's almost getting exciting.
Almost.
Well,
but we've still got a number of questions to go.
In fact, 100% of this podcast will be about data.
A whole 100%?
Yeah.
80% of statistics are made up on the spot.
Yes.
To be clear.
Yeah. At least.
And now it's time for this week's fun fact.
Today, there are more than 37,000 Subway outlets, but the store started with simple beginnings in 1965 as a single sandwich shop in Connecticut called Pete's Super Submarines. The idea for the shop came from Dr. Peter Buck, who suggested to student Fred DeLuca, let's open a submarine sandwich shop. Do you like a Subway?
No.
That doesn't work for my gag.
Okay, sorry.
Do you like a Subway?
Of course I like a Subway.
Do you like a one-footer, or are you more of a sort of 6-inch?
Oh, no, go for...
I'll go for half-foot, shall I? Yeah, okay.
Sometimes that's all you've got to give.
The fun fact. Contact us by email, hello@theprocurementshow.com. Or connect with us on LinkedIn. Search for The Procurement Show. The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, the home of category management that delivers breakthrough results.
Let's talk about our philosophy for data, because the companies that I've worked with are recognizing they need to do something with data. They're saying, well, hey, we need clean data, so we're going to need a master data set somewhere. So that means we've got to do these things and have this master data set. But it's all based on the premise of the data's mine. I'm going to own it. It's my data. It exists somewhere. But are we getting this wrong? Because actually, when we think about what AI and future procurement tech is going to do, we need like 100 times the data points we have today to be able to get that real-time insight, real-time dynamic strategies driving what happens in the supply chain and so on. So we can't have all that data, and there's no way we could acquire it, process it, and use it and maintain it. Should we be thinking about systems that go and get the data at the point we need it rather than having the data ourselves?
I think if you look at the evolution of the way people have been managing their data over recent years, there's definitely been a shift to the cloud. Keep your master data in the cloud, which is a secure, governed area. It's very safe. I think the recent problems we saw at the start of this week showed that having just three suppliers as your major global infrastructure for the cloud is maybe a bit risky. And maybe that should be devolved a bit and we should have more access to a different range of suppliers. But the underlying principle is that you can then access your data from the cloud. So if you look at being able to interrogate your spend data using our solution, you can access that data from a laptop, a desktop, or a mobile device. Now, the data is secure and you can access it securely. So for me, that gives you the flexibility you need without having to create huge amounts of data storage in your own office environment.
But I'm wondering if we can take it to the next level. So that, even if it's in the cloud, it's still data we are owning and managing. What if we said, let's not have the data at all? At the point we want to find out how our supplier is doing in terms of their capacity or flow of goods or something like that, we go and get that data at that point that we need it. So we've got hundreds of thousands of APIs that are sort of punching out from our systems to go and get the data at the point of need rather than storing it ourselves. Is that a thing? Is that how it might go?
If you look at the way we give access to the data for our clients, I think that's much more streamlined than having a labyrinth of APIs connecting everything to everything. A, you're going to need a huge amount of infrastructure. B, that's not going to be a cheap thing to build. And C, I don't really see the benefits of having a direct API when you can access it online anyway, effectively.
Yeah. I know this is going to be one of those how long is a piece of string questions before I even ask the question. How long and big is the process of cleansing data for an organization? How long does it typically take? But also, do you find that some organizations are simply frightened of the process because it's like opening up a can of worms? This data is in such a mess. It's so fragmented. It's a scary process. Therefore, they just turn a blind eye and don't challenge it.
I'm not sure they're turning a blind eye to it. I think it's more sticking the head in the sand for the last part of your question. To answer how long it takes to clean data, we're onto that mythical piece of string.
Yeah.
And it really depends upon how much data there is and the condition it's in. But if you look again at the benefits AI is bringing to this process, traditional analysts could take maybe 12 to 18 months to take in, absorb and clean a really, really messy set of data. We can do that in less than 4 weeks. get to 95% categorization accuracy and 100% coverage of a really complex data set. So we've just been doing a proof of concept for a potential client that had 16 million individual items.
Wow.
That's a lot of data to crunch.
Yeah.
But we've been able to do that, and we did it within 4 weeks.
I'm trying to think of what that works out efficiency in a percentage term.
Well, remember, 80% of statistics are made up on the spot.
Yes, of course, yeah.
Let's talk about dirty data.
Yeah, but muddy data.
Yeah, dirty data. So what are the consequences if the data's not clean? I've got a two-part question. I work with organisations that say, yeah, we're struggling to move forward because our data's in a mess, you know, and we've got to go and do this big project to clean the data up. And it's like they almost paralyse themselves, so we can't move forward until the data's there. And I often say, well, it's great, you need to clean the data up, but actually right now you probably know your pain points in terms of the suppliers that are really important and really hurting you, and you probably know your two or three number one categories. Is there this tendency to just paralyze and say, we can't do anything till our data's perfect, or do we have to have clean data right from the start?
The fundamental risk of not having clean data is you're going to be making possibly inaccurate decisions, or you get to the point of paralysis analysis or analysis paralysis, and you're going to be saying, well, yeah, I need it to be 100% correct, or I can't make a decision. Now, if you're going to adopt that approach, I suspect you're going to struggle forever because you'll never reach that mythical 100%. In a past life, I've worked on innovation projects. And again, you get something to maybe 95% and then you're into beta testing. So you don't wait until you get to 100% before you do anything. Otherwise, most things would never happen in the first place. And when companies are looking at their data, and this is a super common thing for them to do, they just look at it and it's a mess. It's pea soup. And yeah, you might realize that that piece of sausage floating on the top is the number one opportunity. But there's so much more underneath there that you can access if you actually go through the process of cleaning your data. So it all starts with clean data.
We'll be right back in just a moment.
Negotiating is a bit like building muscle. Without the muscle, you won't get the results. But the more you train, the stronger you get. And before you know it, you'll be the strongest. Build your negotiation muscle today. Train your team in Red Sheet Negotiation and watch them win.
Yes.
Visit Red Sheet Negotiation and find out how the top-performing companies negotiate.
The Procurement Show with Jonathan O'Brien.
There's a lot of discussion about using AI agents, you know, where they go off and do automated projects. But I guess in order to do that effectively, these agents need access to a variety of data sets, like, for example, geopolitical data.
Yeah.
How does that look when you're trying to apply AI agents to work on the supply chain and work within procurement? And how can we prepare for accessing those data sets?
Part of the issue is a lot of those data sets sit behind someone else's firewall. And those people naturally would see that as something they can monetize rather than they'd like to give it away.
Hmm.
Wikipedia is still the one piece of information sharing on the internet that's still ostensibly free. Everything else has been monetized, and everyone else wants to increasingly monetize anything they can. If you're going to start to look at things like geopolitical risks, maybe ESG metrics, someone will be collating those, but they'll be collating that on the basis that they can then sell that information. AI agents do need a lot of information, and this is where you hit the issues of maybe copyright, maybe someone else owns the data, maybe someone else wants to sell that data. So for me, the more open we can make organizations and government bodies around the world to share data, the better. However, that does not seem to be the trend that we're seeing at the moment, which is more and more people want to put data behind firewalls.
Yeah.
I think a nice example of changing dynamics is if you look at Amazon Prime Video, they've built up a huge user base and they've just launched a new system where you have to pay an extra €2.99 to watch the same programs without their new advertisements. So they're taking the same database of clients and increasing their revenue stream by putting something behind a slight firewall, which is the advert issue. Other companies, I'm sure, can figure out the same kind of rules and start to monetize their data as well.
And building on that, if we're using data to train an LLM, so if we're using less than clean data, is that how we then get poorly trained AI, we get AI hallucinations? Or is the AI going to be clever enough to be able to figure out that actually that data isn't good because it's triangulating it with other data sources?
From what I've seen, the big LLMs that are in use have been trained using a universal asset, which is the internet. And of course, there's lots of really, really good information available via the internet and web browsers. And there's also some stuff that really shouldn't see the light of day in many instances. Now, the AI doesn't have the ability, as it's searching for information to learn from, to assess this is good, this is bad. So it's just taking information in. So that does lead the chance of you having biases, inaccuracies, additional levels of hallucination, and the problems that can come with that. So, you know, ideally LLMs should be treated on data as clean as possible, but accessing that data is the challenge. And I go back to what we said previously, which is more and more people are trying to put information behind firewalls and making it open access.
Going back to cleansing data then, an organization goes through the process of cleaning data. I guess that's only half the job, really, because then they've got to maintain that data in a clean way moving forward. So what advice and tips do you give to firms in order to make sure that they've started so they'll finish?
The process we take is we would take the initial data feed from a client, which is our onboarding process. And ideally, we'd get up to 3 years worth of spend data because we can then start to see trends over time and actually starts to enable an element of forecasting. And I say that carefully because forecasting is by nature inaccurate. And that can take, as we said earlier, between 2 to 4 weeks to get to the point where it's nicely categorized, it's clean, and it's ready to go. If you assume, and this is how we work with all of our clients currently, you then take an updated data feed once a month. All you then have to clean is the delta of data. So you're just having to clean the new element. In a way, it's treating it like a living organism. You take it in at the start, you clean it. And then on an ongoing basis, as you get new inputs, you clean those as they come in. So it's very much about a hygienic approach to data. So to start out by giving it as good a clean as possible. And then you have to maintain that on an ongoing basis. It's like if you wash your car. If you wash your car and leave it on the street, I guarantee within about 4 weeks, it's covered in dust, sand, cat footprints, and probably some bird droppings. You need to go and clean it again. Nothing stays clean by itself.
There you go. Look after your data and it will respect you in the morning.
Say that.
So moving on. It wasn't that funny. It really wasn't.
It was just so...
And now it's time for this week's Ask Jonathan.
And today's Ask Jonathan comes from Sarah Walsh from Harrogate, who writes, what inspired you, Jonathan, to write your book, Category Management in Purchasing, 16 years ago?
Well,
desperation?
There was a little bit more to it than okay. that, but thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Sarah. Yeah, 16 years ago, now in its fifth edition, so it's gone the distance. Back then, I had been doing category management in some big global organizations. And it was one of these things when somebody shows you, here's a thing that does tremendous things in an organization and will achieve incredible benefits. You don't believe it, you've actually done it. So I lived and breathed that. I did it. And the company concerned, about a 9 billion spend, we saved about a billion by doing really good category management. And that magic, I wanted to share that magic. The other thing was I noticed that a lot of the big consulting firms were kind of establishing their own methods, their own processes and claiming it as theirs. Mm-hmm. A lot of them were distorting the tools and the approach. So I decided to codify it and to define what is now the 5i category management method that we use with companies around the world, but to sort of define how you do it, how you create that magic that achieves those breakthrough results. And prior to that, I'd never written books. I'd originally looked for somebody else to do that for me because I thought I'm no good at it, and kind of ended up with a book contract with the publisher and no experience writing a book. And I thought, how hard can it be? Well, the first edition that didn't get published was not very good because I was trying to write a book. And then I tore it up and thought, you know what? I'm just going to talk as if it's me about how category management works and what makes it a success that it is. And that's what I wrote, and it's now in its fifth edition.
So how long did it take you to write?
About 18 months.
Wow.
Each of the books I've written takes about 18 months on average to write. And then the subsequent editions that the publisher asked for, about another 12 months.
Wow, and you're on fifth edition, so you're still finding typos.
Yes, you still find things that are not right. But the other thing is, over those five editions, since 2009 to now, so much has changed. Mm. Each time I do a new edition, I look at what I wrote previously and think, God, in the last 3 years, the world has just completely changed. And what you see in the fifth edition is so different to what you see in the first edition, because when I wrote the first edition, we didn't know what AI was. Sustainability wasn't a thing. The world wasn't in the chaos that it is now. We weren't too interested in what's happening in the supply chain. And cost was the number one driver that companies wanted. And that's come full circle now, in that the number one objectives for companies is either cost, security of supply, risk, sustainability, or mix of those two. We are navigating a crazy and ever-changing geopolitical environment. AI is changing how we do everything, and somehow we still want to be able to get some sort of breakthrough benefit, but it's got to be something different to what went before, because clients of the organizations doing it are demanding more for less, and they want new things. So category management is a much more challenging thing to do, but if it's done well, it can still deliver outstanding benefits for the organization.
And before anybody asks, has anyone approached you to turn it into a streaming serial?
Yeah, the question is, who plays me? I'm thinking Tom Cruise.
I think he's probably thinking exactly the same thing, yeah. And of course, if you've got a question that you'd like to ask Jonathan, here's how to get in touch.
Ask Jonathan. Email your question to jonathan@theprocurementshow.com. You might be part of the next show. The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, the home of category management that delivers breakthrough results.
Earlier, you talked about cloud storage as the thing that everybody typically does. Is that best practice? Because we've talked about making sure that the data stays clean, but yeah, we've got to store it somewhere. So if we do have the data, is it one cloud? Is it a single cloud? Is there a good best practice in terms of how we make sure that our master data is going to be safe and we're not going to be susceptible to big outages along the lines of what we've seen in recent times?
The first part I can help more than the second. So ideally, you would be using someone like AWS to store your data. They've got massive security. This is a multi-billion dollar revenue stream for them. So clearly, they're focused on getting it right for the clients. I think it's Google, Amazon, and Microsoft are the big three cloud providers. And for us, we take an approach where we work with one of those providers, and we have a separate iteration of storage for every single client. So we never mix client data with other client data or anything else. So we respect their data and we keep that safe. Those companies should be doing exactly the same with their own data, keeping it in a safe place that's accessible to them and only them. The cloud has become the default place to keep your data.
What has the data industry learned from recent challenges with regards to cloud availability? Are there any question marks, or are there new methods of best practice coming in with regards to keeping the data flowing?
I can't really comment on what's coming out of them. What I would go back to is the point I made earlier, that having only three suppliers globally and all originating from the same country is maybe not good for the global health of data. And as geopolitical risk oscillates a bit, and some people make what other people think are odd decisions, the world is becoming a more turbulent place. So having your data in as safe a place as possible is the smart way forward. How we can move from just having a big three providers into more is a much bigger question, because I don't see an immediate solution to that.
Yeah.
Certainly not short term.
And the other bit, because we're talking about how you make sure your data stays good, we've talked about cleaning it, but we haven't talked about taxonomies and how you make sure that it's all consistent and you have a single taxonomy. And you know, once upon a time, that was a pretty dull thing that somebody did. You had a taxonomy and you make sure everything was classified according to that, and you never input any data unless it followed the rules. Do we still need to do that? Or with AI, can we actually do it differently and bypass some of that?
Taxonomy is still a really, really useful thing to have. And to be fair, you can now use the AI to create the taxonomy for itself. But what it gives it is context and structure. So if you're looking at your category taxonomy or your spend taxonomy, you're looking at categories, suppliers, and definitions that you're trying to group so that you can make sense of your own spend. And then that gives you the ability to go and maximize your opportunities with your supplier base. And the taxonomy helps it to link like items. And once you start to link like items, you're aggregating volumes. Any procurement professional will immediately realize the benefits of aggregating volumes, because it generally brings a bigger discount and more bottom line.
Thank you for going into so much detail about data. Yeah. It's been very, very interesting. My biggest data set is obviously my...
My takeaway menu.
Right, in particular, my order history. That's got quite a few entries and it definitely needs cleansing.
Yeah, nearly as many as your browsing history.
Very, yes, almost as questionable. So what are your top three takeaways from today?
The first point I'll make is very much about clean data. Any procurement initiative should start with clean data, or any findings that come out of it are inherently flawed. If you start by addressing your procurement initiative with a data set that looks a bit like pea soup, chances are that's going to spectacularly fail. You're going to spend some time and add zero value whatsoever. Second part is that AI is only as good as the data it touches. So for us, we always start with clean data. When we went to our first conference, we wanted to show our visuals of how we can represent data. And the universal feedback was, no, we can't do that yet. Our data is such a mess, we can't even think about analytics. Mm. So again, it takes me back to, you need the clean data for AI to actually be able to do its job properly. Because again, if without clean data, it's going to make erroneous assumptions or just get it totally wrong. And then the third part, I guess, is a way of looking at data full stop, is treat it as a living asset, keep it clean and follow good hygiene. The first thing that most companies need to do is actually clean their data to start with, because most companies have the pea soup that we've been talking about. But the second is then you don't just leave it and say, oh, great, job done, thank you, we have clean data. You have to maintain it on an ongoing basis. Now, we can do that on a monthly basis or as frequently or infrequently as our clients require. Other companies similar to ours would do something very similar. If you're doing it in-house, then it means you need a team to keep an eye on that data and keep it clean. The problem has been that spend data doesn't receive the attention it should deserve, and procurement has been slightly in the broom cupboard. I think as procurement comes out and is increasingly recognized as bringing the benefits it can, data cleanliness will go up the menu and it will be more important for companies from both spend and sales perspectives.
Andy Simmons, you've managed to make data interesting. And I think that's the first time ever. So thank you so much for doing that. It's been really great to have you on. And thank you for sharing everything that you know about data. Andy Simmons from ProcureView, thank you very much for being on The Procurement Show.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
You've been listening to The Procurement Show. Contact us by email, hello@theprocurementshow.com. Connect with us on LinkedIn, search for The Procurement Show, and visit us at theprocurementshow.com. You can also WhatsApp us on +44 7396 939933. The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, transforming procurement with exceptional tools and advanced training. Produced in the UK by Fresh Air Studios. The Procurement Show is copyright Positive Purchasing, all rights reserved.
Capella is the latest in digital category management. Capella makes creating great category strategies easy, strategies you can trust. Because Capella's intelligence is built upon 5i category management, trusted by companies the world over to deliver results. Which means when you choose Capella's guided mode, you can be confident you'll get the best possible strategy. Or switch to advanced mode and work the 5i steps. All with AI's helping hand. Make digital category management something you can trust. Search Capella Category Strategy or visit positivepurchasing.com to find out more. Capella, the guided category strategy creator.